What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about training efficiency. We're going to go through some very practical tips on how you can make better gains in less time. But first, I want to kind of set the scene here. And I want you guys to kind of wrap your head around this idea that you actually aren't interested in maximal results. I know a lot of us are like, I want to make the best gains. I want to make better gains. I want to grow muscle efficiently and effectively. But that's not the same as wanting maximal results. A lot of people are get into this like muscle building game. They want to get jacked. They want to build muscle. They start following people in this space and people talk about the research. You got to do this many sets to get optimal gains. This is the amount of sets per muscle group per week to make your best gains. It's like, yeah, but you aren't actually interested in maximal results, because maximal, the absolute maximal possible results, means doing a lot of work, a lot of diminishing, and getting a lot of diminishing returns. It's like you're not actually interested in getting 100% fastest, most optimal gains. That would take you like, I don't know, I'm making this up, but like 12 hours a week of lifting weights or something. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm not actually going to do that. So what you're actually interested in is how to maximize the time that you have specifically to train. You're like, I have 2 hours a week to lift weights. How can I get my best results? Or you might ask a different question of, I could work out 2 hours, but I could also work out 3 hours. What's the difference? And how do I choose, you know, if I go up to 3 hours, how much better are my results? Or if I stay at two, like those are the questions you're really asking. You're not actually asking, how do I get the maximal potential results that are available to me as a human being? You are really asking, how can I maximize my results with my specific time that I have to train, given my other life responsibilities, my values, my lifestyle, whatever. And so that's what this podcast is about, is an assumption that 99.999% of people, basically, you know, if you're not a professional bodybuilder and your life doesn't depend on how jacked you are working within time constraints, some amount of time constraints, some of us more than others. And so we're all operating not in a situation where we want maximal results, but where we want maximal efficiency given the limited time that we have. And that's an important distinction, because I'll have, you know, I run a group program, hundreds of people in there. And every now and again, by the way, I welcome all questions. They'll be like, hey, I saw this study that said, you know, you get better results when you do 30 sets per muscle group per week. It's like, you probably do get a little bit better results at 30 sets per muscle group per week. That would take you like, first of all, you could never survive that many sets for all muscle groups. That's like a critique of that sort of a study, but that we can talk about another time. But sometimes people are like, oh, I heard that you get better. It's like, yeah, you probably get better gains with more volume if you can recover from it, if the intensity is high, and we'll talk about that. But you probably don't have the time for that. So instead of saying, what gets me the maximal results, you need to say, what gets me the maximal results within the time constraints that I have, right? And so there's a term, you know, that we use. It's an acronym. It's called SFR. It means stimulus to fatigue ratio, meaning how much stimulus am I getting from something and how tiring is it? And what's the ratio of those two things? If you're a professional bodybuilder and you want to maximize, truly, truly maximize your gains, what you need to do is you need to make choices based on stimulus to fatigue ratio. Because if you have the choice between two exercises, one of them has, you know, a better stimulus to fatigue ratio, you can do more of that thing and you can ultimately get a better result. And all of us should care about stimulus to fatigue ratio. But if you're training 3 days a week, and I'm not poo-pooing that, by the way, we'll get to that in a second, then the whole like the fatigue or recovery side of this really isn't an issue. Like, even if you crush yourself 3 days a week, that's probably still something you can manage on average in terms of week-to-week recovery. So if you're training two, three, four days a week with reasonable, you know, time constraints, you know, roughly an hour workout, you don't really need to worry about how fatiguing something is. You kind of need to worry about how much stimulus you're getting from that thing. You need to cram as much stimulus as you can into your limited time. And I'm not saying categorically recovery is never, or fatigue and recovery are never an issue, but it's just less of an issue, right? The more you do, the more important it is that you're making fatigue efficient choices. The less you do, the more important it is that you're making max stimulus choices, right? If you only think about an extreme example, if you trained 7 days a week, you'd really have to make sure you're not going too hard. If you trained once per week, you'd only be focused on absolutely murdering yourself in that workout. So we are not so concerned with stimulus to fatigue ratio, SFR. We are more concerned with STR, or stimulus to time ratio, because that middle letter, this fatigue or time, is referring to the limiting factor. And for bodybuilders who are trying to absolutely maximize gains, their limiter is going to be how much work they can recover from. It's going to be their fatigue. It's going to be their recovery. For you and me, who are training 2, 3, 4 days a week, it's going to be time. We are limited by time. How do I get the best stimulus per time? Right. So that's going to be what we're talking about here. Right. It's going to be, we're going to go through, I don't know, like 13 different tips on some combination of how can I get more stimulus per set so I don't have to do as many sets, and how can I get more stimulus in a reduced time, or equal stimulus in a reduced time. So these are going to be enhancements in stimulus per set, or a reduction in time without a reduction in stimulus, or with a minimal reduction in stimulus, right? So that's what we're going to talk about. And just to kind of, again, paint this picture as, a reminder, you guys can make amazing gains training 3 days a week. You can get, we have research on, on trained lifters making gains doing 5 sets per muscle group per week, which I'd say is roughly in that three day per week, 45 minute workout range. So I think the first thing people should be doing is accepting, or just understanding and internalizing, that you don't need to be training 5, 6 days a week to get jacked. Unbelievable physiques have been built on 3 and 4 day a week training. I'd say beginners training 2 days a week can see really great gains. Maybe after a year or so, I suspect that might turn into maintenance. But for the very, very long term, for the next 10, 20 years, you can continue to get more and more muscle growth at 3 and 4 days a week. And you can get better gains / get the same gains in less time if you take on board and implement some of these strategies. Now, I tried to list them in order of importance, or in order of magnitude of effect, the thing that I think will have a bigger impact on your ability to get more stimulus per set so you can do less sets, or an equal stimulus in a reduced time. It's not so easy to rank these things. Sometimes I'm like, it varies depending on how much you do them, and there isn't really an easy way to assess the magnitude of effect. But I think on average, this is how I would rank them in order. The first one is train with more intensity. If you train with less sets, if you train with less workouts, if you train with, in less time, you get this. Intuitively, you get this. Just like we talked about before, if you're training less, you should go harder so that you can get more gains, right? It's not complicated. If you were only training 1 day a week, we would train to failure, beyond failure, into partials. You'd try and get every single inch of gains that you can, inch of stimulus that you can from every set. So we have this inverse correlation between volume and intensity. Volume we can use as a proxy for time. We have an inverse relationship between time and intensity. So if you're training less on average, you should train harder on average. And I put this one first because this is, I don't want to just be the, like, when people are tracking calories, there's this like automatic reflex of like, you're not tracking accurately. And it's like, yeah, most people aren't. And that's true. But we can only harp on that so much before it gets annoying. It's kind of similar here where people are like, you're not training hard enough. It's like, it's true. On average, most people are further from failure than they think. And the main most, like, easiest, lowest hanging fruit with big ROI is to train with more intensity, to push themselves closer to failure. And again, the less you train, the closer to failure you should go. And if you train very little, we're talking pushing into length and partials. We're talking, a lot of these drop sets and intensity techniques that we'll talk about. And so there is just understanding this inverse relationship between how much you train and how hard you train. If you're training a lot, then you really need to take care of the intensity a little bit and make sure you don't go too hard. If you train 10 hours a week and all of that training is 10% too challenging, you might, overreach and feel like crap. If you train 2 or 3 days a week, 3 or 4 days a week, and you train really hard, like, you're probably going to recover from that. And so there's an inverse relationship between how much you train, time, volume, whatever kind of terminology you might hear people talk about this with, and the intensity with which you should train to maximize that time. The next is better exercise selection for muscle growth. And I'm going to go through five different categories within the exercise selection. So I want to stop and pause here. The two best things you can do to get better gains and be more efficient, get more gains per set, get better gains in less time, all of that stuff, is train harder with better exercises. Train harder with better exercise. We're going to talk about better exercise means. And, you know, there are five different things I want you to focus on in terms of exercise selection. I didn't list these in order. And some of them have to do with more stimulus per set. Other has to do with saving time. So train harder and choose better exercises for your goals. And your goal in this moment is to get better gains in less time. So the first is use higher stability setups. The more stable you are, the greater output you'll get in the muscles that you're trying to work. An example of this might be, instead of doing, you know, a bent over barbell row, you would do a chest supported machine row where your lower back is less likely to be a limiter. And you can probably push your lats, rear delts, and upper back a little bit closer to failure because your ability to maintain that hip hinged position, your hip and lower back musculature don't fatigue. You can probably push deeper into failure, push into partials if you want. A counter argument is if you were trying to build your erectors also, your lower back, then maybe you do want to do a barbell row, which we'll talk about in a second. But on average, the more stability you have, the further you can push your target muscles to failure and beyond if you need to. So things like, you know, instead of doing a barbell back squat, maybe you pick a hack squat. If your goal is quads, a counter argument could be, well, what if I want quads and glutes? Maybe a barbell back squat is a little bit more of a balanced movement. And okay, I'll hear that argument. But on average, we want higher stability setups. Again, a barbell back squat or a leg press. I pick the leg press every time if your goal is optimal hypertrophy, if your goal is saving time. Because the leg press is a higher degree, it has a higher degree of stability. It has a lower kind of technical quality. The leg press is very easy to do from a technique perspective. You don't have to worry about your lower back fatiguing. It's less cardiovascularly fatiguing. It's easier to execute given different structures. People that are taller or shorter can get into a leg press and do it reasonably well, pretty easily. So higher stability setups are going to help you get more stimulus per set, maybe help you do less sets. The next is choosing exercises or variations that have easier setups, like just take you less time to set up. Like if you have a hip thrust machine in your gym, you should absolutely be using it. People will message me in my group. They're like, oh, my, you know, I'll program like barbell glute bridge. And they'll be like, oh, my gym has a hip thruster. Should I use it? Absolutely. Use the hip thrust machine. Use your Smith machine. It takes less time to set up and break down, you know, putting a 45 pounder on a hip thrust machine than it does piling on, you know, 200 pounds onto a barbell and then stripping it down, right? And so choose exercises that have easier setups that take you less time to set up and break down. A lot of times that might be machines and cables over barbell work or plate loaded machines where you're loading up a bunch of plates. I'm thinking about like a hammer strength plate loaded chest supported row. I do like, you know, four plates on each side. Whatever, that's not a flex, but I'm just saying that takes time. You know, I have to put on the 45 plate, do a warm up, put on a 45 plate, where right next to that machine, there might be a pin loaded machine where I just take the pin out and I move it and it's much easier. Right? And that might even be barbells that might even be dumbbells. Dumbbells are incredibly accessible. You don't have to strip down weight, load weight on. You just grab the dumbbells and you go. And so thinking about how long, and I do this all the time. I have a home, you know, in my group program, there's a gym version and a home version. And in the home version, of course, you don't have a ton of machines. And so I really think about this a lot when I'm programming of how long is this workout going to take? Because of how long it takes to kind of go through the setups. And our first glute, if you're in my group program, you'll know what I'm talking about. The first glute day often looks something like RDLs and glute bridges because, you know, when you're at home, you don't have as many options. So you're doing an RDL, which means you're loading up the barbell. Then you're doing a glute bridge, which means you're also using the barbell. And I think there are some little tips and tricks to make that take less time. But I think about that stuff of like, hey, this person's using a barbell twice in a workout. That might be a lot of shuffling plates on and off, and that might add time to the workout. The next, in terms of exercise selection, is more length into position stuff. And it's pretty clear that stretching muscles, you know, getting muscles into a deep stretch and challenging them there, both of those are important, is important, or let's say helps you get more muscle growth on a set-to-set basis than short position work. An example of this would be, don't do five different hip thrust and glute bridge variations in your program, but not do any lunging, right? Lunges and leg presses and RDLs and step-ups, they all challenge the glutes in a more lengthened position. And so for hypertrophy on a set-to-set basis, they're going to be a little bit better. And so if I look at someone who's like, hey, I only train 3 days a week and I really want to grow my glutes, and it's like glute bridge, hip thrust, 45-degree hip extension, single leg hip thrust, glute kickback, I'm like, hold on. You know, if you just swapped all of these or some of these out for more lengthened position stuff, you would add no time to your training and you would get more benefit. And that doesn't mean, I'm talking about along a spectrum, along a continuum on average. I'm not saying scrap all your short position work, just do lengthened stuff. Even in a quite efficient program, I think there should be some short position work for orthopedic purposes and potentially regional hypertrophy stuff. And even just for like in the hopes that it is something that if you went all lengthened, maybe it would be really damaging and you'd be really sore and all that stuff. But again, along a continuum, a little bit more training in the length of position, a little bit less training in the short position, because on a set-to-set basis, you're going to get more gains from training in the lengthened position. So again, more RDLs, more lunges, more split squats, more leg presses, more step-ups, and maybe a little bit less, you know, hip thrust, glute bridge, hip extension, kickback, any other short position glute work. Yeah, that's about it, let's say. Cool. The next one is choosing compound lifts. You know, this one's a little hairy. I wouldn't only ever do compound lifts, but again, on a continuum, if you have only 3 days, and I'm going to use 3 days of training per week because it's a decent proxy for like somebody who's trying to be really time efficient, but still also wants to make gains. You know, you should use mostly compound lifts. When you do a push-up, you get pec hypertrophy or a pec stimulus. You get a front delt stimulus. You get a tricep stimulus. When you do a pull-up, you get lat stimulus, you get some rear delt stimulus, you get bicep stimulus, forearm stimulus. When you do a back squat, you get glute stimulus, quad stimulus, adductor stimulus. You know, when you do, you know, so that doesn't mean you don't ever do a leg press. It doesn't mean you don't do a bicep curl. It doesn't mean you don't ever do a tricep extension or a lateral raise. You absolutely should still do that stuff somewhere in your program. I'd say if you're training 2 days a week, so again, along a continuum, the more you train, the less compound lifts you need to have because you have more opportunities to work your whole body, even if they are more isolation lifts, kind of breaking down the muscle groups into smaller parts. The less you train, the more you might need each exercise to cover more than one base. So again, there's this inverse relationship between how much you train and the importance of compound lifts. The more you train, the less I'm worried about you doing compound lifts. Now, you should absolutely still do bilateral pressing and pulling and hinging and squatting. All that, of course. I'm not saying don't do compound lifts if you train a lot. I'm just saying the emphasis and importance of doing mostly compound lifts goes down when you're training 5 or 6 days a week. When you're training 5 to 6 days a week, you can have multiple bicep exercises, multiple tricep exercises, multiple different lateral raise variations. You know, you could do multiple hamstring curls. If you're training 2 days a week, we're doing heavy hinge pattern, bilateral row, bilateral press, bilateral squat. We're not doing, you know, preacher curl, single arm tricep extension. We might, but our emphasis will be on covering more bases. All right. I mean, it's not complicated. If you're training less, then it means that each thing you do needs to cover more bases. And the last one is doing more bilateral work than unilateral work. And again, I would stress the phrasing of this is the importance of. Or if you feel agnostic about this, meaning like if you look at it and I say, all right, Susan, you can do a bilateral barbell back squat, or you could do, you know, the same technique, but in a split squat where you have to do the right and the left and the right and the left and the right and the left. I think most people will save a little bit of time with this one. This one's probably the least important because I do think if you do a bilateral back squat and you rest 4 minutes between sets, which is pretty much what I would suggest, somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes, and you do 3 sets of that, that's 12 minutes of resting. Let's imagine each set takes 1 minute, so that's 15 minutes to do 3 sets of barbell back squats. I think in 15 minutes, you could do 3 sets of split squats. You know, you could do the right leg, which takes, let's say, 45 seconds. I'm making that up. And then you could rest, you know, let's say a minute 15. So each leg takes about 2 minutes. And so you could get through 6 of that in 12 minutes. And you could even rest a little longer to equate, right? You could even rest a little longer. You could rest a minute 45, and I think we get ourselves up to about 15 minutes here. So I think if you rest in between limbs and you can equate for total time, I don't think you save a ton of time doing this. But I will speak from experience that unilateral work might just feel a little bit more mentally fatiguing because you have to do more total sets. You have to kind of gear up mentally for more total sets. But I don't think time-saving-wise, it's a huge needle mover, but it does, it can kind of wane on you if you have a million different unilateral exercises. The next one, I think, is still in the top tier of ways to save time. The rest of these, after this one, they go into maybe tier two. But so far, we're still in tier one, which is train with more intensity and better exercise selection. And then this one is use or utilize intensity techniques. We've seen a lot of research on, and I'm going to start with three of these. We've seen a lot of research on myoreps, which are a rest pause technique I've talked about quite a bit. I utilize a lot in our programming. Drop sets and supersets. And so a myorep set, I've done this explanation a few times, but myoreps are a rest pause technique where you do one regular set, let's say bicep curls, and then instead of resting 2 minutes and doing another set, you only rest about 15 to, 5 to 30 seconds, depending on your strategy. You rest very little, and then you go again, and very little, and you go again, and very little, and you go again. And because you've only rested, let's say 15 seconds, you have barely recovered from the last set. So when you start doing bicep curls again, they are immediately close to failure again. And you might be able to accumulate a lot of what we would call close to failure reps or failure approaches in a very short period of time. If I do a set of 10 bicep curls to failure, right? Let's say the last three are the most stimulative. And then I rest 15 seconds and I do three more. And I rest 15 seconds and I do three more. And I rest 15 seconds and I do three more. All of those sets of three were incredibly challenging because I only rested 15 seconds. And so at the end of that process, I got three really, really hard reps on the first set, and then three in the second, three in the third, three in the fourth. That's 12 really close to failure bicep curls. Now, if I did four sets of bicep curls with a 2 minute rest, four sets of 10, I'm making this up here, you'd still get 12 close to failure reps because each of the final three reps of each set would be close to failure. But that might take you 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Whereas that original example of doing myoreps got me those 12 close to failure reps in maybe 3 minutes. And so myoreps are an incredible time saving technique. What I would say is if you're going to use myoreps and you're trying to equate volume to what you maybe used to do without myoreps, you should do a little bit more. So if you were going to do three sets of bicep curls, but you really want to do myoreps, what I would do is one set of myoreps plus three more myorep sets. So four total sets. If you're going to use myoreps or drop sets, which we'll talk about in a second, I would do one additional set to kind of equate to what you might have done otherwise. If you were going to do three bicep curls, I would do one set plus three additional myorep sets. And you can just copy and paste what I just said for drop sets. Drop sets, the only differences are that you usually don't rest at all. You usually rest as little as possible, and you're lowering the weight. And instead of doing three more reps, you might do another full set of, 8 to 12 reps or something like that. You might do 8 to 12, drop the weight. 8 to 12, drop the weight. 8 to 12. And over the course of those three sets, you accumulated a lot of close to failure reps. You pushed super deep into fatigue. And we do have research that shows that if you kind of round up the volumes using some of these intensity techniques, you can equate stimulus to a pretty good degree, in which I think it's an amazing tool. If you don't train a lot, I would highly lean on myoreps and drop sets. I prefer myoreps, frankly. I think myoreps take even less time because you are not doing another set of 8 to 12. You're just doing another set of three, four, two, five reps, something like that. Where when you do a drop set, you do a set of 8 to 12, drop the weight. You usually do another set of like 8 to 12. Of course, it depends on the prescription, but with myoreps, you're just resting 15 seconds and then doing three more and 15 seconds and three more instead of having to do another full set of 8 to 12. And when it comes to supersets, as long as you're pairing together two exercises that don't impede with one another from a local perspective, meaning they don't train similar muscles, you're not training muscles in exercise A that are going to, inhibit you from good performance in exercise B, and you're not picking an exercise that has a really big cardiovascular demand, then we see pretty much if you pair two exercises together intelligently, and I'll go through a couple of examples, we don't see a big drop off in stimulus. And so if you take something, a lot of people like what's called antagonist supersets, where you do like a a leg extension, and then the antagonist of the quad muscle is the hamstring, and then you go do a hamstring curl. Or you do a bicep curl, and then you do the antagonist, which is a tricep extension. I actually don't like doing that. I don't think there's any like unique benefit to their to those muscles being antagonists. What's more important is what I would call non-impeding supersets, meaning exercises that don't impede with one another, like a calf raise and a bicep curl. Right? They're not antagonists, but they're just so far from each other. I don't even mean geographically on the body. I just mean they have nothing to do with each other. You having like painful calves going into your set of bicep curls will affect your performance like 0.0001%. If you do a lat pull down and then a leg extension, I think you're going to perform very similarly than if you did them separately. I think there are some nuances here. The bigger and stronger you are, the more fatigue you'll carry from one set to another, regardless of the muscle groups impeding or not. Like I'm not even that big and strong, but if I do a really challenging set of lat pull downs, even though leg extensions have nothing to do with lat pull downs, I'm still kind of fatigued mentally from that set. So what I would say is if you're more advanced, you're bigger and you're stronger, instead of going from one exercise right to the other, you might do something like lat pull down, rest 60 seconds, leg extension, rest 60 seconds, lat pull down, or lat pull down, rest 90 seconds, leg extension, 90 seconds, lat pull down, 90 seconds. And you might find that 90 seconds is enough for your cardiovascular system, your kind of your mental state to get ready to work hard again. But 90 second rest is less than the 3 minutes you would have normally done. Normally you would have done lat pull down 3 minutes, lat pull down 3 minutes, lat pull down 3 minutes, and then leg extension 3 minutes, leg extension. That takes technically an additional 90 seconds per set. And so doing supersets, whether you're not resting at all or you're shortening the rest times and alternating between exercises, can be a really great tool. Next is kind of goes hand in hand. I think that's why I put it next, is minimizing rest times. I want to make sure I'm clear on this. I think you should be resting long enough to have good performance in your sets. I don't think you should do a back squat and then a minute and then a back squat and then a minute. And the funny enough is that example I just gave you is where you do back squat, 1 minute rest, back squat, 1 minute rest, is the protocol in a very famous volume study, which is why I think some of these volume studies are a little bit, they lack a little bit of external validity. They don't really reflect how we train and practice. Nobody is doing a set of back squats to failure, resting 60 seconds and doing another set of back squats to failure 5 times in a row. So anyway, that's a conversation for another day. But what I would do is just not piss around during your rest periods, right? You don't need 5 minutes between leg extensions. You don't. You don't even need 3 minutes between, bicep curls sometimes. I think sometimes in some cases that's smart. My point is don't rest longer than you need to, but you can hear the hesitation in my voice because I think more people on average, especially people getting into resistance training, should rest longer and perform better. You know, going into your next working set on a little bit shorter rest is something I would reserve for the more advanced trainee who can really operate and have good technique and work hard under a little bit of fatigue. The newer you are to training, the less likely I would prescribe this. Because on average, the newer you are to training, the more I want you to be going into your sets feeling fresh, because I really want you focused on working hard, and I really want you focused on working hard with good technique. And as somebody who's newer to training, you don't have the skills, the motor pathways, the neurological efficiency to keep your technique really, really solid under a high amount of fatigue. And so that means maybe, going a little bit further from failure, but that's not for today's discussion, but also maybe resting a little longer so you're going into your sets fresh. So I guess this one is, just don't rest longer than you need to. But again, if I had somebody who's like, hey, Jordan, I'm not really sure if I need another minute. If you're not sure if you need more rest, I would take it. But if you are absolutely sure and you're like, yeah, I'm taking fucking 6 minutes, I'm going up to flirt with the girl at the juice bar in between sets, it's like, yeah, maybe, that would be a way you could shave some time. The next one is don't stress exercise order. And what I mean is exercise order is relevant. It's relevant, meaning, people ask us in my group all the time. They're like, hey, Jordan, is it okay if I do the exercises out of order? Every time I'm going to use the leg press, there's 800 like banana haired, broccoli headed teens on it who are just there for like 3 hours. Is it okay if I skip it and come back to it later? Absolutely yes. Do not wait friggin' 5-10 minutes for a machine just because you want to do it in order. exercise order is so far down the totem pole of things that matter for muscle growth. Like if you took your workout, let me just give you the most extreme example. Let's say you do 4 days a week, five exercises per day. That's 20 exercises per week, right? Let's say you wrote them all down on pieces of paper, crumpled them up into a ball, like you're picking out lottery numbers. And every day you show up to the gym, you pick four exercises, right? And you pick them out one by one, or you pick five, and you pick them out one by one and you go do them. And after you've done them, you put them in another pile for the week so that you can go through all of those 20 exercises, but you do them in a completely random order. And you compare that to another person who does the exercises in the absolute exact order that they were prescribed by their coach with the utmost amount of logic and, you know, theory behind it. I bet you over 10 years from now, both people look identical. There are some like training diagnostic stuff. Like if you normally do leg press second, but now you're doing it fifth, then yes, your performance will be a little bit worse that day. But I think over time it washes out and it's not worth, you know, if someone's like, hey, I got one set left. Yeah, okay, maybe you wait because, you know, it gives you an opportunity to do it the same way you did it last week, which helps you kind of track progress a little bit better. But dude, do not stress this. Like the stuff like the leg press, the Smith machine, you might not have a lot of them in your gym, but you might want to use them. And so you might, you know, I used to tell Jenna before we had a lot of our home equipment, she would go to the gym once a week for cables and machines. And I'd say, hey babe, if you walk in there and nobody's in the Smith machine, you just go immediately and do whatever you have to do on the Smith machine. Cause there was only one Smith machine in that gym. So it's like, yeah, I put glute bridges third, but if you walk in there and somebody is, it's vacant, go take it. So don't stress exercise order. There is a logic and a theory to exercise order. Absolutely. But it's very far down the totem pole. And frankly, like if it's between you getting through your workout in the time that you have available, but doing it in the wrong order to just kind of take whatever machines are available, or you getting less work done because you stuck to the exercise order, yeah, do the first one. Next is lower your rep ranges. You know, they say that you can get hypertrophy or muscle growth pretty equally between 5 and 30 reps if you get close to failure. And I think that that's mostly true, or at least the take home is a good one, meaning that rep ranges don't matter that much. And as long as you do a lot of really hard sets and it's somewhere between 5 and 30 reps, you're going to grow muscle really well. I like that as a take home, as a sentiment. But if you're doing a lot of sets in the 15 to 30 rep range, first of all, it's going to hurt. And there are some other reasons why you might want to go lower in rep ranges. But if you go from training mostly in the 15 to 30 to mostly in the 6 to 12, I think you'll see a fairly dramatic reduction over the course of the entire week. I could see somewhere like a 10% reduction in time just by going down in rep ranges. That doesn't mean you never do that stuff. But if you are in a program that's like everything is 10 to 30 reps, yeah, and maybe try some sets of six, some sets of eight. I bet you it will take less time. You know, there's some other reasons you might want to do that. We tend to assess reps in reserve a little bit better at lower reps, higher weight. You know, and reps in reserve might actually not even be as important with heavier weight, meaning you might be able to actually stay a little further from failure with heavier weight. And so heavier weight, lower reps has some potential theoretical advantages. I put those words there intentionally because I think if you train really hard in the 20 rep, you know, with 20 rep sets, I think you'll grow muscle incredibly well. But I just think it will be more painful. It'll take a little longer. It's maybe a little harder to assess proximity to failure, but it'll still work really well. The next one is don't waste too much time warming up. You know, a lot of people are like, get to the gym, then I walk on the treadmill, then I roll on the cross ball, then I foam roll, then I stretch, then I go through my dynamic warm up. It's like, dude, I'm halfway done with my workout already. You know, like, go. I'm not saying there's never a time to do anything, any sort of a warm up, but like, unless you have a lot of time, I would walk into the gym, literally walk into the gym, walk over to the first exercise you have to do and start doing light sets of that. If you have lat pull down first, walk into the gym with your gym bag, walk over to the lat pull down, put it on 50% of your working weight, do a set of 10, put it on 75% of your working weight, do a set of six, put it on 100% of your working weight and freaking get started. And you can do something like that for each exercise. Maybe we'll do another podcast on how to warm up. But man, you doing lighter sets of the exercise you're about to do is 95% of warming up for hypertrophy. And it's what I would do in 95 to 99% of the scenarios. So don't waste a ton of time on, I got to do three sets of cat camel and then three sets of T-spine rotations and then three sets of thread the needle. And then I got to do this band opening drill. And then I got to roll on the lacrosse ball. It's like, yeah, you don't. I'm not saying there's never, ever, ever, ever a time for any of that stuff, but the time efficient trainee, yeah, there's basically never a time to do that. The next one is, again, we're down, we have two more here, kind of like one and a half more, and we're down the totem pole here, but this one is spread out the hard stuff within a session. Now, this isn't even a time-saving technique. It might even just be a fatigue-saving technique. Like, if you're doing five exercises per day and the first three are your hardest three, that's fine, by the way. I program like that sometimes because you might not have time for all five exercises, and I might want you to do those first three in order of performance. You might find, though, that alternating between hard stuff and easy stuff, like if you do heavy set of deadlifts and then a heavy set of, you do three sets of heavy deadlifts, then three sets of heavy squats, then three sets of heavy lunges. By the time you get to the end of that workout, you're freaking smashed. Honestly, you're probably smashed for the second and third exercise I just listed. But if you did deadlifts, which are really hard, and then tricep extensions, which they're hard on your triceps, but they certainly give you a chance neurologically to recover, mentally to recover from those deadlifts, and then you do squats, which are really hard, and then you do bicep curls, which are hard on your biceps, but not hard on your soul. And so I've actually started to experiment a little bit with programming like this, where it's like, as much as I want you to do the stuff earlier in the session where you're more fresh, you might actually be most optimally fresh throughout the entire workout if we kind of have a little bit of an ebb and flow to the intensity. And the last thing that I might do is I would train at home. Now, I say this one tongue in cheek because, one, not everybody wants to train at home. They like the gym. The gym has many, many, many benefits. Of course, it has a million times more machinery than you could ever purchase at home, which have a ton of value, even like gym environment, being around other people. I know I forgot what that was like. I've been training at home for so many years. I went into a gym, I don't know, 6 months ago or something like that. And I was like, oh shit, like, something about taking your workout public gave me like some good vibes. And so I get that. But yes, training at home saves you time driving to the gym and parking and walking in and scanning in and going over to the locker room and putting your stuff in the locker and then going out and then driving home and scanning, you know, walking to the car. And I mean, in the time it takes a lot of people to drive to the gym and do all of that and drive home, if you add up all that time, me personally, I might be done with my workout. So again, that's a privilege, a mega privilege, super mega privilege. I know. Just, this is why it's at the end. This is why it's a little tongue-in-cheek at the end here. But even, you know, I have a lot of clients who do a hybrid, like my one-on-ones, that are like, I have dumbbells and an adjustable bench at home. Can I do one day there? Just so that on that one day, maybe I can get in and out in 30 minutes and I can still be effective. Absolutely. So even if you are somebody who loves training at the gym, you might say, you know, let's say for $700, you could have an adjustable bench, a high quality adjustable bench. I'm thinking of one from Dick's for like $200. It's the first adjustable bench I bought and I love it. And frankly, I don't even think I needed to upgrade. I bought the Prime bench for like, $600. Did not need to do that, but I did anyway, whatever. But there's a $200 bench at Dick's. And then you buy $500 adjustable dumbbells and you're probably set for life with being able to do an effective, probably upper body or some lower body if you do split squats and stuff, where you can have one workout at home that takes 30 minutes that you can always do in the comfort of your own home between calls, you know, whatever. So training at home is, an incredible privilege if you have a full built-out home gym, but, you know, for sub $1,000, you might be able to get a couple workouts at home that save you 30 minutes of driving, you know? So I hope that was helpful. I'll list those again. Train with more intensity. Go closer to failure. Use better exercise selection, meaning higher stability setups, easier setups that take less time, train more in the lengthened position, use more compound lifts, train more bilaterally than unilaterally. Then we want to utilize intensity techniques like myo reps, drop sets, and supersets. Minimize rest time. Just don't rest longer than you really truly need to. Don't stress exercise order. Lower rep ranges. Don't waste too much time warming up. Spread out the hard stuff within a session, and if and when applicable, train at home. All right, I'll catch you guys in the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.